of leprosy. Did you read chapter 8? That he cured the man that had leprosy. And then he comes to Capernaum. And he meets there, or almost meets, a centurion. He's a remarkable individual. And I got to thinking, how many centurions are there in the Bible? And this lesson tonight was originally named Four Centurions, or Four Pagans Who Believed. And then I got to thinking, I've only got 22 minutes to be able to accomplish what I want to do tonight. I cannot preach all four of those. So I renamed the lesson, Three Pagans Who Believed. And as I began to develop the lesson, all of a sudden I recognized I don't have time to cover all three of those, though we may mention the third one just so you'll know Here's the amazing thing. Those centurions are mentioned, the word is found 24 times in the New Testament in four different books. There's never anything bad said about a centurion. That's from reading Matthew chapter 8. I read that. I know what a centurion is. I know all about that. But as you stop and read it slow enough, who is this centurion? Jesus says he has more faith than anybody that I know. And so let's begin looking at the text itself. We've got on the slide number 2 the entirety of the text, but that's what we're going to look at in this lesson tonight. Let's go to that next slide. He's a centurion. What is that? Well, we say, he's an individual in charge of 100 soldiers. Can we talk about military sizes? You remember Jesus says, I could call 6 legions of angels. Legion was a military term, and it was to describe a group of about 6,000 soldiers. Now, if you take that military group and break it down into a smaller group, you read about those who were in groups of 1,000. You got 6,000 for the larger group. There were 25 legions in the entirety of the Roman army. And so you break down one of those legions and you come to 6 cohorts, C-O-H-O-R-T-S, cohorts. Each of them had about 1,000 soldiers. Inside that group of 1,000, there were 10 individuals who were in charge of 100 soldiers. In other words, he was an individual in charge of a century of soldiers, 100 soldiers. And so you look at that cohort, and we'll talk about this perhaps a little bit later. We'll come back to this word a little bit later. But there is some indication that during the first century, there were 5 cohorts of Roman soldiers established in Palestine. That will tell you how rebellious they were. There were 5,000 soldiers who lived in Palestine and in that area that we know as the Promised Land. What's a centurion? How does one become a centurion? Well, if your father was a man of nobility in Rome, and politics being what they are, don't you call that nepotism? The Caesar himself might appoint your son to be a centurion. He was an individual who was highly respected, at least in the Roman world, and highly respected by those who were under him. And so it could have been a political appointment. But however, sometimes soldiers are made on the battlefield. And so here is that centurion. He is an individual. We know not how he was appointed. We know the likelihood was that he was appointed because of some great show of valor and courage that he had had in some military battle. When the word charge was given, it might be he who led that individual and led that part of those of that cohort. He was that individual, at least a part of that, who was out there in the battle, and he was an individual that could have had a very hard background in his life. We do not know about this centurion, but all of a sudden, as we look at the centurion, we begin to understand some things about him. If you look at the lower right hand, the lower left hand side of the screen, you have the books, verses in Matthew and the verses in Luke that give us the details about what we're to talk about. He was a centurion, but it was a centurion who was compassionate. How do I know that? Well, for a couple of reasons. He was a centurion who was compassionate because he had a servant. The Greek word here, at least in Luke, is not a word that is just a servant. It is a slave. You know how worthless slaves were in the first century? The Roman world said, at the beginning of the year, or maybe at the end of the previous year, when you've harvested your crop and done all of the things that you can do, just sit down and look at all of the tools that you have. And any tools that are old and worn out, throw them away. Centurions had slaves. And here is a worthless slave, servant of the centurion. And yet verse 6 says that centurion says, "Lord, my servant, my slave is lying at home paralyzed, dreadfully tormented." He was a compassionate centurion. You think of a hardened soldier and all that he's seen and all that is in his background, and here is this man who has a piece of property. The world looked at him being sort of like an animal or something, and when he's useless, just get rid of him. Go get you another one, centurion. Oh, no, not this man. There's something about this man, and that's why whenever he got around the Lord, he saw the Lord differently from others. He was a compassionate centurion. But look again. He was loved. Luke tells us that his compassion was so great that he himself had built a synagogue for the Jews. Now you think of the animosity the Jews had. Think of the zealots who were terrorists that tried to kill every Roman soldier they had a chance to kill. And think of the fact that a Jew in Palestine would never befriend a Gentile and especially a Roman soldier. What's this man like? He's not that hardened soldier. He is that individual who at his own expense had paid for the entirety of building a synagogue there in Capernaum. He was loved. I don't know why, whenever the message comes to Jesus from the centurion, Jesus says, "I'll go to his house. I will come to where that servant is, and I will heal him." This man was so loved by the Jews that it was not the centurion himself that came to see Jesus. The elders of the city came on his behalf. And they came on his behalf because this centurion was a humble man. We're about to see this even in detail in just a minute. But he, though he was in high nobility and highly respected, one of the 60 individuals who were there in Palestine at this time, centurions, one of those few individuals that the world placed high above everybody. He understood Jesus so much that he would himself would not even go to talk to Jesus. The Jewish leaders went on his behalf and said, "My servant is sick." Speaking for this centurion and the humility that he has. And so whenever Jesus tells the man that I'm coming to heal your son, the message given to him is, "Oh no, I want you to understand, I'm nobility. I give a command, and when I give this command, if I say to that man, go, he goes. If I say to that man, come, he comes. But I am not worthy to say to you, come and heal my son." Read it carefully. This centurion did not say, come and heal my son or my servant. He said, I've got a sick servant. He knew a lot about Jesus, didn't he? And whenever Jesus is approaching the house, servants are sent out that says, don't you dare come into my house. I am not worthy. I'm not worthy. Not a hardened soldier. Some way, somehow, the Jews among whom he lived in all likelihood had so manifested God before him that he who has nothing at all to Judaism, he who would not, be welcomed into that synagogue in all likelihood because he was hated so much. You look at this individual, and when Jesus looks at him, Jesus says, I have not found so great a faith nowhere in Israel. Wow. How much regard do you have for Jesus? And so Jesus says, I'm living among God's chosen people. This man has more faith in me than anybody I've ever met. Let's go to that second centurion. We don't have much time to develop it. But in Matthew chapter 27, it's also in Mark 15 and in Luke 27, there is that time when Jesus is ready to be crucified. You look at the mockery that he received. Matthew 27, verse 27 says that when Pilate finally says, take him and crucify him, that a garrison of the soldiers came together to mock Jesus. It could have been that he was scourged at this time. For he had been scourged, or he was scourged. And so a cohort of soldiers were called together. And the mockery that Jesus received could easily have been in the presence of 1,000 jeering evil men. There's a Jewish individual who lived in Alexandria. His name is Philo. The writings of Philo of Alexandria are somewhat available. You know a little bit about him. But he talked about these Roman soldiers, and they were down in Egypt. Some of Roman soldiers were there and saw a little boy that was an imbecile, mentally afflicted, and they scourged him, and they crucified him because they had no heart. And when you read Matthew chapter 27, and we've got several of the words that are highlighted on the screen. We'll not look at every one of them. They put a crown of thorns on him. They stripped him. You want to humiliate an individual? Remove his clothes. put a robe on him, but it's a robe of scarlet. And they began to honor him as the king of the Jews. And there is all of this leering that is going on, and hundreds of Roman soldiers are there. And you begin reading all of those words that are used. In the midst of this, there's a centurion. He is the one responsible for the crucifying of Jesus. And so this centurion led him out, led him away to be crucified. The centurion could have seen the mockery of Jesus. He's got to deal with it. Is he a worthless individual, worthy of having all of this mockery before hundreds of individuals who are jeering at him, scourging him? And so we darken the screen and we say, he's a centurion who saw Jesus die. He had never seen anyone die like Jesus. I cannot imagine, though I have had conversations with those who've been in battle and who have actually literally killed someone. It changes you. My three uncles, innocent young men, still in high school, when Pearl Harbor came along, all volunteered. My three uncles volunteered. Innocent young men went overseas, two in the Army, one in the Navy, and they came back totally changed because he'd killed somebody. And so here's a man who likely in his background had seen people die, but he'd never seen anyone die like Jesus. He saw him die. He was a centurion who knew death, and he heard what Jesus said. We don't have time to look at all the seven words, sentences he uttered on the cross. Here's a hardened soldier, likely. And he hears Jesus and he's watching him die, and something happens inside of him. He hears his prayer, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they're doing. And he, the centurion, is the object of that prayer. Those soldiers that have mocked him, those who have jeered, those who have spat in his face, and that those Jewish leaders who are mocking him and saying, if you are the Son of God, come off the cross and we'll believe you. The jeering that's going on. And he hears Jesus say over and over again, the Greek says, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. Even the thief, both of them are saying, if you're the Christ, save yourself. And then he hears Jesus say to one of those thieves, when that thief says, remember me when you come into your kingdom, Jesus says, today you'll be with me in paradise. He saw a dying man not cursing the mob, not screaming out oaths of rage that would be the very natural things that individuals would do. He heard Jesus being concerned about his own mother. And finally, he saw him die. How did he die? It's finished. Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. And David talked about Jesus being the Lamb of God. Here's a lamb led to the slaughter, and he opens not his mouth. The centurion had never seen it. And then you look at the text. He's a centurion who saw him die. He was responsible for the breaking of his legs, by the way. That's who the guy we're talking about. Jesus' legs were not broken, but the breaking the legs of those two criminals. And he felt the earthquake. Hear the text. The veil of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom, and the earth quaked, and the rocks were split, and the graves were open, and many bodies of the saints who had fallen asleep were raised, and coming out of the grave after Jesus' resurrection, they went into the holy city and appeared to many. Now read it carefully. So when the centurion and those with him who were guarding Jesus, when they saw the earthquake and the things that happened, they feared greatly. And they said, I've highlighted the word they to say, read the text slowly. It was not only the centurion that arrived at this conclusion. The centurion says, I just saw the Son of God die. Pagan Jews living among those who feared God, at least outwardly feared God, and some who were sincere in what they did, became a believer, and he says, I just saw the Son of God die. He's that second pagan that believed. I want to ask you, do you believe with all of your heart that the Son of God died? Then why would you not change your life and confess that you believe with all of your heart that Jesus is the Son of God and be buried with Him? Not in a tomb, He in a tomb, but we're buried with Him in baptism. And He was raised, and you shall be raised out of that baptistry a new creature. Why would you not obey the gospel? Why would you not let Him add you to that kingdom that He promised that individual who was with Him on the cross? Why would you not give yourself to Him and then live full of faith, be faithful? Do you believe as much as these two centurions did? Pagans who did not have the background that we've had in a Christian nation, would you not let that faith cause you to respond to this invitation right now as together we stand and sing? Will you come?